Welcome to the Phoenix Cast, a podcast about cybersecurity, technology, and innovation issues in the military. We are your hosts, John.
And Kyle.
I'm a U.S. Marine, and the opinions expressed on the cast are my own, not official military policy.
And the opinions expressed by me are my own, not those of my employer or any other businesses I happen to be associated with.
For today's episode, we have dual special guests, Major Chris Drake and Lieutenant Trevor Barrow. Can you give us a quick intro?
Hey, thanks, gentlemen. This is Chris Drake. I'm a cyberspace officer, currently serving as the company commander at the DCO IDM company in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Background as a communications officer, starting out with 3rd Battalion, 11th Marines, spending some time with 7th Marine Regiment, and then moving over to MAR4 Cyber, doing a deployment with them, and then lat moving to the cyberspace MOS. So after that, went over to 95 Cyber Protection Team before coming out to the DCO IDM company.
And Chris, before we jump over to Trevor, this podcast episode is going to have a lot of me acting as the acronym police. Can you give us a quick, for the listeners who might not know, what does DCO IDM stand for?
Absolutely. Defensive Cyberspace Operations, Internal Defensive Measures.
Woof. All right. Sounds impressive. Trevor, over to you. Welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Trevor Barrow. I am also a cyberspace officer, MOS 1702, at the DCO IDM company. I was one of the first batch of officers to come into the Marine Corps with that MOS, and I've been here at the DCO IDM company since around 2020, coming up around 2 years now.
All right, and to quick set the audience here, because cyber is somewhat new and the way the Marine Corps has decided to structure it has been evolving, as Trevor mentioned, with us now allowing lieutenants to directly ascend to the MOS instead of it just being a, you start an MOS and then move into the 17 cyber occupation. So first off, 17s are split in two. You have 17s that do defense and 17s that do offense. Unrestricted officers, like both Chris and Trevor, are in charge of both and will move back and forth between defense and offense throughout their career. And what we've heard a lot on the podcast, we've said CSSP, cybersecurity service provider, that is the normal security functions that you're used to seeing. So turns on a server, make sure that the server is patched, has the right amount of controls on it, has a firewall on the network, that firewall is cabled in line so that it can protect your traffic, all of that stuff like that, generally handled by the communications or 06 occupation field. And then we have 17s who sprinkle on a little extra defensive goodness that we'll get into throughout the cast here. So with that as kind of a scene setter and a quick breakdown of the different MOSs, could you both talk me through what's the organization and structure of the DCO IDM company? Where do they sit? What do they look like?
Yes, absolutely. And first, I'll give a little bit of background to the DCO IDM companies. So first, there was the cyberspace commands that were set up across the different DOD units, and biggest one, so Marine Corps, aptly named MAR4 Cyber. And from there, all of those cyberspace commands really operate at the strategic to operational level. And the Marine Corps had the question of, how do we bring this down to the tactical level? And that is where they started standing up these DCO IDM companies with the different Marine Expeditionary Forces. There's three of them, one of them in North Carolina, where I'm at now, one in California, and one in Okinawa, Japan. So our DCO IDM company here in North Carolina was stood up in 2018. It is placed under the Communications Battalion, as you're speaking to, kind of that 06 communications field. But really, it serves that Marine Expeditionary Force, or MEF. That's our primary customer where we provide all of our capabilities to.
All right. So each MEF has its own DCO IDM company, and you are with the DCO IDM company that services?
So we service two MEF, 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force. It services the MAGTAF, which another big acronym, Marine Air Ground Task Force, the MEF being the largest portion of the MAGTAF. And going all the way down to the Marine Expeditionary Units, which are normally your floats that are more the forward deployable forces. So that's really where we provide our service, is to these MAGTAF units. So 2MEF mainly focused over here on the more European-based front. And that's where we're able to provide anything, whether it's in garrison here in North Carolina in support of that MEF, or if it's forward deployed.
Okay, great. And Chris, did you have something you want to add there?
Yeah, I was just going to dive down a little bit deeper into the structure and what we were intended to be, how we intended to be utilized. So when the Marine Corps decided to create the DCO IDM company, it took the structure largely from the cyber protection team. So the Marine Corps has their own essential version of this that sits at various different bases across the country. And our structure was modeled after that, as well as our functions. So we are what I like to call an additional sensing element that the MEF has. So like you mentioned before, John, there's the cybersecurity service provider who's intended to be network specific, threat agnostic. And then we are the inverse of that. So we are network agnostic, threat specific. So we can get into a little bit later how there's a little bit of deviation from that just based on where we sit and 2MEF being our main customer. But largely, we're just an additional sensing element for the 2MEF commanding general and the 2MIG commander. Also, a kind of a delineation between CSSP and the DCO IDM company or CPT. So we're intel driven. So everything that we do, every operation that we conduct first starts with what is the threat? What are the vulnerabilities? Who are the main threat actors? And then we give that indications and warning to the operating forces as we're sitting on these networks of any potential adversary intent or activity.
Okay, great. And my guess is, since this is a kind of new thing, or the Marine Corps has chosen to do work a little bit differently, even, you know, from back when I was in the fleet, what's your guiding document, or where do you get your rough idea of how this is supposed to work so that you get an idea of what you actually want to do?
Yeah, John. So in the end of 2020, the Marine Corps released a document that essentially serves as our guiding document, how we're structured and how we're intended to be deployed. And that's our concept of employment. So that's the main document that we use when we're informing senior leaders on our actual employment.
Okay. And I'm sure that's super helpful to have a document that says what you're supposed to do, you know, as at least as a starting point for negotiations on what you're actually going to do. What are some of the things that the document says it's your job to do?
So the concept of employment breaks down our actual organization. So we're intended to be employed as squads and deployable detachments and called squads. And then it also goes into our core functions of hunt, clear, enable hardening, and assess. So some specific definitions that go along with each of those things. But essentially, we are on the network, again, as a sensing element with specific tools. And we specialize in looking for adversary activity on a network.
Okay, great. And so I guess just kind of recapping some of the stuff that we heard, from there, I got big difference between like a CPT and DCO IDM is you're directly assigned to the MEFs. So the MEFs can go directly to you and have kind of their specific needs handled right by some organic unit, which is you. And then hunt, clear, enable, harden, assess. That does not say, you know, operate firewall, patch servers, et cetera. So you have a very separate and distinct role from those CSSP roles. Do you think that that's fair assessments there?
Yeah, absolutely. And something that that comes up quite often is the difference between the 06 community and the 17 community. So there's a lot of conversations about what that's supposed to look like. But yeah, you hit it on the head, John. Those traditional cybersecurity functions that we saw with the 0689 MOS didn't translate over to the 1721 MOS. So there's a little bit of gap there and a little bit of catch up that I believe needs to happen. To get everybody on the same page and functioning along those two different lines. They're very much interconnected, and we just need to continue to come together and make sure that all those gaps are covered.
Awesome. And I, spoiler for the audience, I am working on putting together a series of podcasts to kind of go through this because it's nuanced, it's interesting, and there's a lot to put and evolving. So we're working on getting something out there specifically about that. So look for that in a whole nother podcast. So we're not going to try to tackle here. But I like I said, broken down in the squads, and I like to think about what each of the individual Marines are doing. So first off, where did these 17s even come from? And let's just talk about the enlisted Marines because you know we've talked about the restricted and unrestricted officers, and while that is super exciting, like let's get to the enlisted Marines. Where did these newly minted 17s? Where did they come from? And what kind of training, if any, did you give them? Or did you just say like, hey, surprise, you were an 89 and now you're a 17. How did that work?
Yeah, John, I'll try to tackle that problem. So first, kind of going back to the creation of the 17XX occupational field. So first we had these 0689s, which were the cybersecurity technicians. Those were the ones that were really doing your compliancy checks, ensuring that you're doing your vulnerability scans, typical CSSP fashion work. And then a few years ago, they took all of those 0689s and just made them into the 1721 Defensive Cyberspace Operator MOS. And this did a few things. So one was taking all of that knowledge of the cybersecurity framework and just kind of shoved it over into the 17 AUC field where it has a different role in defensive cyberspace operations. And that kind of left a gap in the 06 community where now we have these network admins and system admins that were never formally trained in cybersecurity. And now we've been trying to kind of meet in the middle with that on, you know, what's our roles and responsibilities? How can we understand your gaps and help assist? But at the same time, trying to stay in our lane and what that kind of that concept of employment says we should be doing. So that happened a few years ago. And we still have, especially like our staff sergeants, E6s and above, we're typically 0689s. And now we have either junior Marines that just came into the Marine Corps with the 1700 MOS. That happened really, I think, about 2 years ago is when we got our first junior Marine come in when it was just a company of mainly, you know, E5s and above. And now we also have a bunch of lat movers who came from a different occupational field and now transitioned over to RMOS. And we've had a fair bit of those. At one point, I think our highest was about 30 and a company of about 60. So about half of our Marines were all lat movers that came from a wide berth of different previous MOSs. Some of them could have came from the network administrator, system administrator field, or they could have came from infantry, ammo technicians, motor transport, who never really saw anything with computers, just saw an interest in it and came over to us. So those lat movers came over. They haven't been to any formal training. They're with us while they're kind of waiting to get a school seat. And it kind of became our responsibility to just kind of, okay, how do I set these Marines up for success whenever they get to the schoolhouse and for their future career? And we kind of built out our own training curriculum for them while they're with us as doing on-the-job training, which I think is a good opportunity for them to kind of see what the job entails, how it's operationalized, what kind of opportunities they'll have. While also giving them that foundational knowledge of what they need to know. So these Marines, once they do their on-the-job training with us, they go to their formal school. And so there's two parts of the formal school. One part is hosted by the Navy down in Pensacola, Florida. And they do that for about 6 months. And then they go to a Army-led school up in Fort Gordon, Georgia, where they do another 3 months of training. So in total, you're getting 9 months formal training in this MOS, going everything from the foundations of networking all the way to more of the, whether it is defensive threat hunting or if it is offensive exploitation of a computer, that it goes over all of that in a 9 month period. And then once they get done with that formal training, they're able to come back to us as a fully accredited 1721 and be able to be used more operationally.
So I have to ask the very obvious question after hearing that explanation and sort of hearing the back and forth before this, and I'm coming at it as the outsider, obviously, but since the 89s have shifted over into the 1700 AUC field, who's doing the old 89 work? Like, who's doing patches and compliance and like garrison level cybersecurity stuff?
Yeah, so now it has, all that responsibility has transitioned into the MOS's 0631s and 0671s, who are the network administrators and systems administrators, respectively.
So these are the people that went to school for like Cisco CCNA type stuff and then went to like your Windows system administration type stuff are now being tasked with upskilling on the job to go through and have all the responsibilities that the 89s used to have, which was its own dedicated school and its own dedicated training track. And is that correct?
That's very correct. So yes, no formal training, but there is that expectation now that, okay, these Marines need to be able to run their host-based security system, their vulnerability scans, So it really comes down to that leadership who have that prior knowledge or at least gone out and learned it for themselves and be able to instill that in those junior Marines.
Okay. So I am the human personification of Owen Wilson's wow kind of thing happening right now. So this is good information to know. Thank you, Trevor.
Kyle, you're on top of your voices today. I like it.
I'm really trying, you know, just trying to give the people what they want. If things get really crazy later, I'll dump into Matthew McConaughey a little bit. It's good.
Yes.
If I could go a little bit deeper on what Trevor was talking about, the extensive amount of lat movers that we have. So it's a huge benefit giving these Marines a head start. So a lot of them spend 6 months to a year, depending on how quickly they get their clearance or if they already came with a clearance. And it's a great opportunity for us to give them an introduction to the MOS and then just let them know how the DCO IDM company actually operates. So really cool opportunity to get to work with those Marines. And Trevor mentioned it, but the various backgrounds that we get these Marines from is pretty incredible. So, you know, we've had Marines 0311 serving with victory units. We've had motor transport technicians. And some of those Marines are the most technically savvy. They love doing this stuff. They do it in their free time. And they hit the fleet or they come back to our unit and they're our heaviest hitters. So just for anybody that's listening that might be considering this or coming from a different MOS, don't be scared about what that might mean and whether you think you have the technical background. We'll get you there and the school will get you there. And like I said, some of the best Marines we have, some of the most technically proficient came from MOSs outside of the communications or traditional cyber MOSs.
And that doesn't seem to have changed much. You know, when I was a company grade officer, I think most of the best staff NCOs I knew were all lat movers from something like aviation mechanic or something along those lines. So, you know, the Marine Corps is really good at taking Marines from one MOS and moving them to another. And if you're an NCO that's got some motivation and some passion and you're ready to put the work in, sounds like it's still going to work. Awesome. So, hey, real quick. So we talked about how you got a piece of paper that tells you what to do. We talked about the individual Marines. Do you have gear? Do you have a CMR? Do you have to sign for things?
So we do. When it comes back, so we have those four main functions of hunt, enable hardening, clear, and assess. So we do have tools that support all of those functions. It comes in the form. It's a MAGTAF DCYDM suite, MDS. It's like two acronyms within an acronym. But that comes with all the hardware and software that we need for functions, whether it's data analysis, forensics. We have servers that are able to do a whole host of virtualization. We've built entire ranges off of them. So it's a very versatile piece of gear or kit that allows us to do a whole host of things.
Awesome. And it's very cyber of you to take an acronym and embed it in an acronym. So well done. Gold star right from the beginning. All right, so now that we've gone into the gear, the Marines, the kind of concept of employment, who is your boss? Like who tells you on a day-to-day basis what you're supposed to do? Where do you fall under the organization? And then I have some follow-ups after that.
All right, so there's a little bit to unpack here, so I'll try to hit everything. So kind of alluded to it before, but we are formally aligned under 8th Communications Battalion, which is one of the battalions underneath the MEF Information Group. So another acronym within an acronym. And then recently within 2MEF, there's been a little bit of a fusion between some MEF staff as well as the MIG. So we our tasking comes via the MIG through the MEF Effects Coordination Center. And that essentially is the one belly button or touch point for all domain effects across the MEF. So if the 2MEF commanding general needs kinetic or non-kinetic effects, he can go to one place and get those and planned for and then executed. So we're pretty unique. We sit within that environment. So we have resources that we can tap into from across all the different capability areas. And one of those that really helps us out is, as I mentioned before, tying into intelligence and the intel cycle. So that's what drives our operations. And being there within that fusion center allows us on a daily basis to, you know, just look across the row and reach out to the intel analyst who's feeding the battle captain on what's going on. And that battle space awareness that's created from all these capability areas that are sitting in one spot really is pretty powerful. And we're able to not only tap into that, but add to that as a sensing element.
Okay, great. And so I had a question. You have a bunch of really passionate and highly trained Marines. How much of your tasking or what you're doing on a day-to-day basis is your really smart Marines going out and saying, hey, we need to do some sensing over in this area? Or is it you being told like, hey, this is a really important thing, go do that, hybrid of the two? What does that look like?
I would say it's a hybrid of the two. One thing that has definitely surprised me coming here is the amount of operational engagement from the different commands within the MEF. So the DCOIDM company is a known commodity across the MAGTAF here. And so from anything from garrison exercises to forward deployments, there's DCO in general is considered when these units are operating. So it's pretty awesome to see. So we get a lot of requests and we support a lot of units just by word of mouth and them understanding what the DCOIDM company is and what we can bring to the table. And then, like you also mentioned, we have some brilliant Marines who understand these networks and know how to bring value. So there is a lot of grassroots bottom-up development of operations to get after some of these unique problems that we find within the MEF.
Okay. And we had General Pasagian on a couple podcasts ago, and he talked about how essentially now everything is IT because everything has an IP address, a hard drive, software, et cetera. So I think when you think DCOIDM, your mind kind of goes to infrastructure or servers or firewalls or something, you know, very traditional communications infrastructure type stuff, applications maybe or something like that. Maybe you're not thinking Humvees, radars, AAVs, et cetera, or, you know, vehicles and aircraft type stuff. Do you find yourself mainly operating in the traditional infrastructure area, or do you feel like the capability is understood and you're doing both operational requirements and infrastructure requirements?
It's definitely a mix of both. And I think the paradigm is shifting a little bit, but we continue to support in both ways. And this is where I think we, the DCOIDM companies in general, differ a lot from the cyber protection teams. So most of the cyber protection teams, just kind of speaking generally, operate on garrison networks and they are agnostic. So they install equipment, conduct an operation, and come back and reset before they go back out. But we have persistence on the 2MEF tactical network. So the MEF is our primary customer. That's where we live and breathe. So the traditional comm infrastructure we're able to cover down on, but there's also another difference is that this is a warfighting network. So while it's not a garrison environment that might be supporting the warfighter, this is a network that is going to forward deploy and warfighters will be using this network to conduct operations. So there are a lot of other C2 platforms that you mentioned that are tied in. And so we have the expectation that we need to be able to conduct operations and provide that same sensing reconnaissance capability for those types of equipment as well.
Awesome. Thanks. That was definitely helpful understanding how you're getting to do both the infrastructure requirements and the operational requirements. And I'm sure the fact that you mentioned earlier is going to really help with that as well. So what other type of stuff are you doing? So we've got the people, we've got the equipment, we've got what your background is. What do you generally do other than the standard iSecure networks and do the sensing?
Yeah, John, I'll take that. And I'll hit on one of the exercises that we're most proud of that we built, and it's called Cyber Fury. So we've done 3 iterations of this exercise starting in 2019, but it was essentially one of those grassroots innovative ideas of, okay, we have all these Marines, we have these skills, let's put them to the test. So we created kind of our own exercise to try and take a red team and put it against our own blue teams. So that way we can go and see like, okay, our skills up to snuff against this known adversary. And so we created Cyber Fury. The first one we did up in Fort Belvoir, Virginia with some army units. We built out all of the network infrastructure ourselves. We did all the planning. We created the event lists. And we also created our own essentially standards to be graded upon. With no real guidance from higher, we just stole something from the cyber protection teams and said, let's evaluate ourselves based on this with no real requirement. So we did that for a couple of years. And the last one we did in July of 2021 was our biggest yet. So we've grown it every year. This past July, we had involvement from Coast Guard Cyber Command. We had Marine Corps Reserves. We had those MAR-4 Cyber CPTs out there. We had the Marine Corps Red Team as the adversary force. And then we had teams from our own DCO IDM company, all just to test our different skill sets and are we good enough, as well as trying to get that interoperability with these different units. So that way, if we go into a forward deployed environment, we already have that relationship built. On top of that, so what we're trying to do now as we continue this exercise is to get more involvement from the different OIE functional areas as it comes into whether that is just intelligence collection, getting different, say, counterintelligence people into the room, trying to get signals intelligence, this big melting pot of different MEF-owned capabilities to see how can we assist each other in the greater fight.
That is cool. Real quick, acronym check. You said OIE. Can you give that for the audience?
Yes, I apologize. So OIE is Operations in the Information Environment. That is just the overall encompassing term of, say, information warfare as it comes to messaging, cyberspace, all that fun stuff.
So Trevor, I want to double click on a couple of things that you just mentioned there, because, you know, my background, I love going to the field. I got stuck in the office way too often for my taste. And so the ability to get out there and actually get some stuff done is near and dear to my heart. When Chris was talking earlier, kind of mentioned the word of mouth being the best way to sort of get the method out there and the message out there of what you all do within the Marine Corps. But when you talk about and listening to you explain about Cyber Fury, this feels like an incredible opportunity to take sort of that melting pot approach to pull that back. And I just, to put you on the spot for a little bit here, are you taking the lessons that you learn from those Cyber Fury efforts, from those cross-functional, cross-branch exercises, and are you using that to sort of write your own playbook internally for how you increase the efficiency of your messaging and your communications internally to the Marine Corps? And just thinking through, you know, if you can get a bunch of different types of, you know, branches of service and you know, red on red forces kind of working together in these exercises, do you find that very valuable to come back and say, and now we need to evolve from what we learned from that exercise for next year?
Absolutely. And it comes from kind of the small level of how our own standard operating procedures can be improved based on things that we saw, and up to that higher level of seeing, all right, so we work with the Coast Guard. They have a different methodology of attacking a problem. How can we involve that into our own processes so that we can become better as a whole? Yeah, and same time, just taking all of that and messaging it, be like, hey, we are a capable force. We're able to provide all of this capability up to all the way to the operational to strategic level, and that we're ready to fight.
Yeah, and just to go a little bit deeper on the Cyber Fury and some of the partnerships there. So this is something, again, that coming into this company that I was pretty shocked. So being up in the Beltway or seeing how MAR-4 Cyber operates, obviously you know that there's a lot of external engagement, partners and allies. And obviously the MEF does that to an extent. And then at the tactical level, you know, you're kind of going out, you're doing your mission and maybe not necessarily having that same level of outreach. And that was something that I was very surprised and pleased to see when I got here, was that level of engagement. So Marine Corps Red Team, you know, you're coordinating with MAR-4 Cyber, you have reservists, so 6th Communication Battalion, their DCO IDM company, you're bringing them into the fold. And then Coast Guard Cyber, just another part, a key partner and ally in the 2MEF fight that we're able to bring in, and just building those relationships and figuring out how each other operates and then going forward from there. So just all opens the door for all sorts of other opportunities that are too vast to even mention right here. But it's been really awesome to see that the at the tactical level, the amount of outreach and different partners that these guys have been able to get on board with.
And Trevor, I've got a couple follow-up questions for you. So first one, is this conducted on a pure virtual or segmented network, or are you doing this live and theoretically anyone could make their way there?
So that's one of the beauties of this exercise, is that we build our own standalone network for this exercise that is closed off. Nothing else can touch it from outside, which does limit the ability of people to try and participate remotely. But we find that whenever we have that closed network, it gives us a lot more freedom to conduct those actions. So our Marines and usually some help of the communication battalion builds out this network for us to operate on. We just set a standard of, hey, here's what we want to do. Can you please build it up to a standard that allows this?
Excellent. And final follow-up, bragging rights. Do you guys get some cool flair that you're putting on your company colors? That's probably not authorized, but please tell me that there's some good bragging rights associated with this.
There's always bragging rights. So we have teams operating independently against a common adversary. So there's always going to be that competition aspect, especially in the Marine Corps, where it comes to, oh, I identified this action, but this team didn't. So there's always some bragging rights involved. And I think last year, the Coast Guard wanted to show off Cyber Fury. So they created patches. We have all kinds of stuff that we build off of it.
Okay, that's pretty motivating. Chris, you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, definitely. So speaking of bragging rights, so two of my good buddies are the company commanders out in 3MEF and 1MEF. So if they're listening to this, just a call out to them that
they're listening.
We'll put our team up. I'll put our company up against you any day. So let's get a competition on the line and see where we fall out.
Ooh, I think this is the first podcast trash talking that we've gotten. How has it taken us 51 episodes to get to trash talking? Two, Kyle, your thoughts.
Yeah, I just want to call out that, ladies and gentlemen, the very first cross unit challenge has been extended here on the Task Force Phoenix podcast. So if anybody is interested in making sure that this becomes a reality, any general officers listening to this, I'm speaking directly to you at this point. John and I and Rich would be happy to come, you know, present at the award ceremony for best battalion or whatever we're going to call this as far as the cyber realm is concerned. We want to make this happen. We are morally, ethically, spiritually invested in this being a thing. So just throwing it out there. We're gonna push hard to make this happen.
Moral, ethical, and spiritual.
That's
investment.
Right.
Wow.
It's as invested as you can be here. This is no index fund. This is YOLO on whatever this cryptocurrency is going to be. We're going all in.
Okay. Going all in. I love it. on that note, Chris, speaking of going all in, are there any other things we should know about the DCO IDM companies?
Yeah, just a few other things that we do throughout the year and that we've done over the years and some recurring exercises. So Cyber Yankee is something that we routinely participate in. And we usually partner with the 6th Comm Battalion, so the Reserve DCO IDM company. And that's another great partnership and relationship that I've touched on a little bit, but really able to leverage that over the past few years and then engage in that exercise, just another touch point for us. Basically any major MEF level exercise that you can think of, like I said, there's the ask for DCO support. So DCO IDM is always involved in some capacity, and those are both CONUS and OCONUS operations as well. And then something that's particularly interesting, I mentioned kind of supporting the warfighter and being on that warfighting network, is we'll go down to that regimental and battalion level of a victory unit. So an infantry regiment or an actual victory unit during maneuver warfare exercise. So we'll go out into 29 Palms and support those forces as they're getting ready to, they're prepping for an operation or going forward deployed.
And how do you find that engagement? Do you feel like that's something where just natively they completely get it and they're just like, hey, Chris, I need your team to blank, blank, and blank? Or is that one of those things where there needs to be a little bit of education and investment before you're going to get anything to pay off for that?
There's definitely an education that comes on the front end of it. But I think that a lot of the Marines that have been here for a while and have worked with the company before are starting to understand it. But also, when you work with those types of units, they're used to requesting effects from external entities. So they kind of know, I'm going to call this subject matter expert and I'm going to get them into the room. And I know I want this effect. So I'm going to ask for this effect and you tell me how you need to get there. And we'll figure out what that mutual support looks like.
And has it been difficult to, because most of those effects we're talking about are like kaboom, i.e. can I have some rounds or some bombs or something in that regard? Has it been difficult translating what sometimes is normally a physical effect into a most likely not a physical effect? Or is that something that we've progressed on pretty well and it's pretty well understood?
I think there's always, so the burden is on us to provide that for the senior leaders. So we have to find a way to get to the point where we can communicate that effectively, and they just inherently understand what it is that we're talking about. The MIG and the MEF and this fusion center that they've created, I think is a great step in that direction, because now you're getting all of those types of people in the same room. So we can start to collaborate and figure out what that common vernacular is to get to the common understanding. And so that's when we talk all domain effects, that's where it happens there. So you're not only talking about the bombs that you mentioned, but also these non-kinetic effects. And let's just call them one thing. Let's put them in the same place. And let's figure out how, as a MAGTAF, we can plan and execute those operations.
100%. I think back to the sort of, post 9/11 era of really realizing what non-kinetic effects were going to be in the sort of counterinsurgency realm that we all as Marines walked into with some preparedness. I think that we all had a ton of learning to do and we had to adapt very quickly, but as Marines are wont to do, we kind of figured it out and rolled with it really quickly. I'm excited to sort of see how we get better and better and better as a force as we evolve into getting non-kinetic to really embrace the cyber realm.
And I also like how Chris kind of came out there and said, like, hey, this is active involvement. This isn't sitting back and waiting for someone to call up your number and understand exactly what they're supposed to ask for. You know, it's a part nerd, part salesman. I love it. Trevor, is there anything you wanted to add here?
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is some of the larger events that we've done. So throughout the couple of years that I've been here, we've had a few kind of incident response missions that we've conducted, and that's where that feed from intelligence is so crucial. And whether that is just something that happened kind of worldwide that we see on the everyday news, or if that is reporting we've gotten from a higher echelon, it really puts into that real operational mindset of, okay, there was something that happened. Let's go and evaluate the 2MEF tactical network and see if we were susceptible. Other than that, we had a few others. So there was an exercise back in, I think it was June of 2021, where we were supporting a unit that was forward deployed. There was an active event that happened. So that was kind of that great mesh of, okay, we've been doing this for a while, and now we really get to see the payoff. And then one of the largest exercises that we learned maybe the most from, it was a MEF level exercise back in 2020. It was the first large scale exercise that the MEF used its own tactical network that we were so heavily involved in. And we had the Marine Corps Red Team out for that as well. And kind of seeing how well we were able to cover on that very large, almost enterprise scale network, and then identify different events and communicate that up to our higher commands to make sure we get the appropriate response.
How would you say the response to that was? Because I've seen a lot of times, whether you're doing a tabletop, an actual exercise, and exercise on a live training environment, a lot of times you can get the people around the table, you can hear them say like, hey, we found this and this and this. But translating that into, okay, I am going to assign John to go and patch this thing or re-architect the network in such a way that this isn't so easy to do. How have you found...
Develop the new STIG.
Or, you know, apparently if you're one of the Coasties, write a new patch yourself.
Yes.
How did you find the audience reception to this? Was it kind of, oh, hey, that's awesome, we're going to get to this? Or was it kind of one of like, oh, great, now my list is 1,001 things?
I think overall, our command was very receptive. And the fact of, you know, we're still a very new unit and commanders like, okay, here's kind of this cyber capability. We don't really know how to use it, but then seeing it in practice and have that training evolution is really what shows them, okay, this is what they can provide. This is where they add value into this overall fight. So we saw, like, especially as I said, that MEFLO exercise back in 2020, a lot of things come out of that into how our relationship is with kind of the communication side of the house. We have a MEF network operations center, and how do we communicate and interoperate with that entity to make sure that the CSSP function as well as the DCO IDM function is working together?
Yeah, and just to go a little bit deeper on that too, so we've mentioned before that we fall under 8th Communications Battalion. So they are the essentially the MEF action arm for these major exercises and operations for the communications infrastructure. So being part of that unit just allows us, we already have that foot in the door. So for things like Cyber Fury, we can just partner with one of the line companies and tell them what our requirements are, and we can build out that network. When we go forward for these different exercises or operations, we are already partnering and working with them in the rear. So it makes it a lot easier. And that's another difference that that you see from the cyber protection teams. Every time you go out, in my experience, you're building those new relationships, you're figuring out who the local admins are, and trying to get your foot in the door. And so, like you said, John, almost selling yourself first each time you go out. And now we, in this environment, we have those relationships already built. So it just allows those things to flow a little bit more easily.
Yeah. Or to say another way, for the people who this may not completely be sinking in, Trevor or Chris just need to walk down the hallway to be able to talk to these people, where, you know, in many cases, the people are going to come in and do your assessment, not the same state as you, or not the same unit or structure or anything like that. So being inside the same relatively small unit battalion, 8th Comm battalion, really helpful just from a people, person, and relationship standpoint. So that was an interesting point. Thanks for bringing that up for us.
And John, I'll also echo here that I feel like we've heard this exact recommendation/argument a couple casts in a row now of, you know, if you happen to be right down the hall or in the same room as somebody, it's easier to work with them. And I don't know why this feels like rocket surgery when we bring it up, but it feels pretty solid to me.
Yes, definitely. But there is also a tyranny of time and space of, wouldn't it be great if we could put all of our infantrymen and aviators and comm and cyber and intel all in the same space, but then you kind of run into the like, ooh, that's a lot of hangers and a lot of space in one area.
You're not wrong. And I don't want to trivialize the fact that it's, you know, time and space are hard. And you know, if I trust anybody, it's Mark Zuckerberg. Metaverse is going to save us all, even in the Marine Corps.
Oh,
so
God.
Rock on.
That is not the direction I thought this cast was going to go, but that's what you're here for, is to bring me in places that I never would have gone otherwise.
That's right. If I don't make at least one metaverse joke a day, I don't know, I think like a kitten dies or something. So I've just got to make sure that I'm spreading the irony of that entire system.
Love it. So we are towards the end of the episode here. So Chris, what's your final take that you have for us here?
Yeah. So if I could just kind of speak to the broader community, especially to the 1721s. I know not being in that MOS or having your experience, it may not necessarily resonate, but having the cyber protection team experience and being up at MAR-4 Cyber for a while, seeing some of the other CPTs operate, the service teams, the national teams, just across the board, I can tell you that coming here, I wasn't sure what that was going to look like as a 1721 and how that employment, what that employment would look like. And after the 7 months that I've been here, I can tell you that this is an absolutely great place to do your job. So I've mentioned a few of these things before, but you have persistent access to the network. There's deployment opportunities for exercises and operations, and there's flexibility to employ the tools, that software and hardware, as well as the TTPs. There's a ton of flexibility to experiment and really see what works here. So if you're looking for a place that you want to go and just do your job and do it frequently, get to forward deploy and partner with some pretty cool organizations outside of the Marine Corps, in my opinion, there's not a better place to do it than with the DCO IDM company out at 2MEF.
Outstanding. So we are at that time. Kyle, I know we've had a star on our calendar for this one for a while now. Hit us with that hot take.
I'll start by saying I really appreciate Trevor, you and Chris coming on here and sort of sharing this. One of the things where, you know, as the one host on this cast who isn't day-to-day involved in cyber operations in the Marine Corps, it's always interesting to me and very fulfilling to hear about all the ways that we are adapting and all the ways that we are trying to change the status quo for the greater good. And I think that my takeaway today is to not forget that there's a lot of life, of things to learn outside of the Beltway and MAR-4 Cyber proper and the sort of, you know, headquarters elements. Something that transcends civilian or military operations is that senior leaders need to make sure that they're involving themselves in the units closest to the fight, closest to the friction point, and make sure that the policies that we so often talk about on a day-to-day basis best support the current reality at the tactical level before they support the current reality at the strategic level. If we let the other way around happen, things are not going to go great for us in the cyber realm. And full disclosure, I totally get it. This is all super, super easy to say as some dude on a podcast, but we know the Marine Corps moves fast And while it may not move as fast as all of us want, keep this in mind that none of us is as smart as all of us. And I, for one, am super excited to see the value and the impact that the DCO IDM is bringing to our force-wide cyber capabilities. So keep it up and can't wait to see what happens next.
Gentlemen, thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Trevor, Chris, thanks so much for joining us. And dear listeners, thanks for joining us. You can connect with us on social media by going to Twitter and following at USMC underscore TFPHOENIX. That's at USMC underscore Task Force Phoenix. Our editor is Sarah Clarkson, and marketing support is provided by Jake Osborne. You can support the cast by going to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a 5-star review, which you still have not done, and accompanying comment. And with that, we are out.